Now that the fullness of summer's bounty is upon us, it can feel as though there are almost too many fresh vegetables and fruit on hand. But that doesn't mean that you have to use all of them at the same time. And actually, my next guest might prefer limiting us to just one, two, or three. I'm referring to Roseanne Gold, the four-time James Beard Award-winning author and chef who revolutionized the art of simple cooking with her 1-2-3 cookbook series. Her most recent is Radically Simple from Rodale. And, Roseanne, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you, Leonard. It's great to be here.
And to our listeners, if you want to seek advice or share your special recipes for dishes that use very few ingredients, you can give us a call here at 212-433-9692 or write in on our show page at WNYC.org. Or if you tweet, our handle is at Leonard Thopate. So, Roseanne, is there ever a danger of using too many ingredients?
Always. What happens with that is that very often you tend to muddle flavors. And this time of year, it is perfect to really keep everything so simple. In a funny way, I think a farmer's market visit when I was 18 years old in Italy changed the course of my life because I realized that ingredients there were so amazing that they barely needed cooking. And it really was about letting the inherent goodness and flavors of the ingredients speak for themselves.
When you walk through a farmer's market, will one thing in particular grab you?
One thing at a time, probably every foot or two. I had a couple great experiences this summer. I was in Santa Barbara, California, and I heard that the farmer's markets there were amazing. And of course, that's where Julia Child lived and Betty Fussell, and these are real foodies. I thought it looked like Technicolor, almost an Oz experience, walking through the door from black and white into this gorgeous, vivid colors of everything. And I made some discoveries there, things I had never seen before, mostly in citrus. So they have different kinds of lemons that are so profoundly different that it really changed things that I cooked. I brought them home.
Because they're grown locally, whereas we have to import them, so we only get the mass-produced lemons.
Exactly. And the flavors were so different. They have a lemon called a Lisbon lemon that was the closest in this country to the kind of lemons you might get in Sorrento or Capri. They had the Meyer lemon, of course, but we can get that in New York now. They also had something called a Eureka lemon, and they probably named it that because when you try it, you really say Eureka. Just fantastic. They also have something called a caviar. Caviar lime. Now, this I had never seen before. It is the size of your thumb. It's green. Maybe it looks like little baby avocado. And you open it up, and with a little spoon, you take out these little granular bits. It almost looks like caviar or Topeka caviar. And you can put that on oysters or just spoon it over a salad. It's fantastic.
When you're walking through a farmer's market, do you concoct taste combinations when you see different things, or must you figure it out when you're at home?
No, I think this is my really great pleasure in life, especially farmers markets, but I do it everywhere. So I'll see an ingredient and I'll say, wow, what two or three ingredients can I add to that to really make an entire dish? And I can certainly give you some examples.
But do you decide which thing you want to be predominant in a recipe? Is it harder when the ingredient doesn't have a very big flavor, like a cucumber?
Oh.
Or muskmelon?
I'm very into cucumbers, and I can tell you about what's going on with those right now in the markets. But let me give you an example. I almost feel like the ingredient tells me. So I saw some really gorgeous tomatoes in the farmer's market the other day. And so it was about the tomato. So I decided to cut them into kind of odd shapes, wedges, and big chunks. And I tossed it with some za'atar, which is this wonderful spice mixture from the Middle East. And I made a salad out of it just by shaving wonderful feta cheese and then just drizzling it with olive oil. All right, that's one thought. But then I decided to turn it into dinner. And I did that by plopping a piece of bluefish on top, sticking it in a 500-degree oven, and then just drizzling it with a little vinaigrette. And that was it. That was dinner. So even though there's swordfish and there's za'atar, it really was about the tomato.
And the, you gave us a recipe, heirloom tomatoes with lemony tahina.
Yes.
Tahina, not tahini?
Well, I say tahina, and I think this is the way I see it in more cookbooks in the Middle East, with an A at the end, but it could also be tahini. And this is really a go-to recipe. Again, tomatoes, heirloom tomatoes, you can use the different color tomatoes, the different flavors, the heirlooms. But the sauce is nothing but tahina that's whipped with an enormous amount of lemon juice and then grated lemon zest, salt and pepper. And you just pour that over the top and it's wonderful. But that tahina is also great on grilled fish, on grilled chicken. It is just wonderful.
With tomatoes, can't you sometimes just cut them raw into pasta and let the pasta cook them and make them into something like a sauce?
This is kind of an old, famous dish from Italy. It is the way I do it. I don't keep them completely raw. I cut them raw, but then I let them sit or soak up, sit in a bath of olive oil and some herbs and a smashed garlic cube. A clove, you don't want to use too much. And then you let it kind of soften a little bit. And then, of course, the oil is infused with all of these flavors. And then I mix it with the hot pasta.
My guest is Roseanne Gold, author of 11 cookbooks. She was the first chef to Mayor Ed Koch and the consulting chef to the Rainbow Room and Windows on the World. Unfortunately, both of those no longer with us for different reasons. Her latest book is Radically Simple. It is published by Rodale. This is WMIC, WMIC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate, and we invite you to tweet us your three-ingredient summer recipe from the farmer's market, but make sure to mention our handle, which is at Leonard Lopate, or you can call us at 212-433-9692 or write in on our show page at WNYC.org. Roseanne, you've given us a number of recipes that we have posted on our show page. One of them is beetroot yogurt. How did you think of combining beets with yogurt?
Actually, this is from a recipe from a long time ago, and then I was so curious this year because one of the trendy new ingredients was yogurt made with savory vegetables, asparagus, and perhaps beets. I haven't had them yet. I'm actually very curious to try it, but I love the idea. So
wouldn't that be more like a smoothie?
No.
A beet smoothie?
It depends on the ratio of the pureed beets to yogurt. If you kept on adding yogurt to it, it might get to be a smoothie. In fact, I do have a recipe for something I called a roasted beet and orange latte, which is where the beets are roasted until they're really, really soft. It's pureed with fresh orange juice. And the synergy of the kind of sweetness and acidity, it's gorgeous. The color is amazing. And then I top it with frothed milk, and that's really good.
Beets can be golden, they can be red, they can be deep purple. Mm-hmm. And don't their flavors change throughout the summer and the fall?
Yes, they do. Also, the size of the beet is going to make a difference because of moisture content. Everything matters.
How do you roast them? I tend to just put some olive oil and salt on them, put them in aluminum foil, throw them in the oven, and wait until I can feel that they're getting squishy.
Okay, so my question for you is this. Do you peel them first or do you leave them whole?
I leave them
unpeeled. Okay. So, and then how do you get the peel off at the end?
It kind of comes off fairly easily once they're cooked.
Yeah, it's true. In the very beginning, I used to spend a lot of time peeling raw beets, which is a little bit of a challenge. But I do wash them very, very well.
Yeah.
And you can just leave them on a sheet pan. But if they're whole, I like to capture the kind of the drippings from the beets. So I put them in aluminum foil. I don't even do oil. And then at the end, I will capture the juices, add my flavoring ingredients and olive oil.
We have a caller who has a recipe she wants to recommend. Gina from Columbus Circle. Hi, you're on the air. Columbus Circle, does that mean you're working at one of the fancy restaurants in the Time Warner building?
I'm there all the time shopping at Whole Foods.
I thought that you were working for Jean-Georges in his kitchen. Go ahead.
Oh, no. I'm kosher, actually. I couldn't do that. But on one Shabbat, many of you met 20 years ago, there was an amazing appetizer. It was grilled salmon. And I asked the hostess afterward, what did she do? It was the simplest thing. Like your chef said on the air. You get lots and lots of fresh lemon. You marinate it in a piece of salmon. And then what you do is, while you're marinating it, you turn up the oven to, like, broil. You make the oven really, really hot. Then you take Grey Poupon mustard, and you spread it all over the fish with fresh pepper. And just for 7 minutes, you put it in the oven, and you let the top blacken, and it's absolutely divine, and it only takes 7 minutes.
Now, are you talking about salmon steaks or salmon fillets?
The long rectangular salmon, not the horseshoe, but just the regular salmon fillets.
Okay.
Wonderful. Sounds good. So three ingredients, salmon, mustard, a good mustard, and lemon.
No, and pepper. Well, I don't count the salmon, because you said you wanted, like, spices.
Yes,
so
that's
the
lovely.
Lemon, pepper, and Grey Poupon mustard.
Perfect.
Thank you for calling us. In fact, in your three ingredient recipes, you don't count the pepper.
Right?
Pepper,
actually, that's so
salt,
funny.
And water are the three things that you don't count.
I'd like to not count the salmon. I could do this for the rest of my life. Actually, but, you know, people like to play with this kind of three-ingredient notion, and every so often they really stick me with this idea of, hey, that's a fourth ingredient. This is a methodology. This is a way of thinking about food. It's the haiku of cooking. And I have a favorite expression. It's a Japanese proverb that goes, if you can capture the season on the plate, then you are the master. Love that.
We have a caller from where you've just been, California, Los Bolivas, California. Theo, Stefan, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Roseanne.
Hi, Theo, is this you?
It is me.
Wow, I just met Theo recently in California, and she actually owns an olive grove, and she has a restaurant and a farm stand. She is Miss Farmer's Market.
Well, I love the three-ingredient concept, and I also have a passion for za'atar that I was introduced to on my last trip to New York City at Kaluzhin's, where I had never been. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right.
Pretty close.
But I actually love to make, like, what I call, like, a vegetable ceviche, so any fresh vegetable, even cutting corn off the cob with just a lovely balsamic vinegar. And if you marinate any veggies for a couple of hours, sprinkle the za'atar on, it just becomes like a crispy day pickle.
That's a lovely idea. Thank you.
And sure. Thank you for calling.
Good to hear you guys.
We don't want your long-distance rates to go up any higher. But can you explain za'atar? Can I just go into a shop and say, where's the za'atar, the jar of za'atar?
Yes. It is a wonderful spice mixture from the Middle East. It is very popular in about four or five countries, Lebanon, Syria, Israel, and Jordan.
So it's at specialty shops, I assume.
Specialty shops.
Or
Sahadi's,
places like
that.
Yeah,
but, you know, it's the new pomegranate molasses. You know, every recipe 3 years ago had that, and now every recipe has za'atar. So it's an intoxicating spice blend, and this is what I say about it. That it smells like Jerusalem and it looks like marijuana. It's very ruddy. It's made from hyssop, sesame seeds, and sumac.
Clifton from Carroll Gardens, hi, you're on the air.
Hello. So I got a great three-ingredient thing that goes way back to when I was a kid in Mississippi. Oh. And when summer came and the peaches were fresh on the trees, one of the best things growing up was to slice them in half, take out the pit. Then we cut up some shallots, put them inside the pit, and then wrap the whole thing with bacon and put it on the grill till it got toasty and burned. And when you bite into it, you got this, like, amazing fruit juice with the bacon, and then the shallot, just put it over the edge and really makes it just alive and fun. And,
oh,
like,
my
summer.
God, I have to tell you, I just got goosebumps. That is the most exciting idea I have ever heard with a peach. And you're talking about a small whole shallot. I guess you peel it.
Yeah, you just chop it up, you know, dice it, you know, and that's it.
And then bacon goes well with peaches?
Yeah, why not? You've got the sweet and salty, and you have the allium taste from the shallot. I'm so impressed. Thank you.
And Clifton, you're from Mississippi?
Yes, sir.
How did you wind up in Carroll Gardens?
Not even
South Brooklyn.
Well, I used to live in Williamsburg, and now that I'm in Carroll Gardens, my mama thinks I'm a little bit closer to home, so I guess that works.
Thank you for calling us.
I'm making that tonight.
Well, peaches right now are at their absolute height. Do you have a favorite? Do you like yellow, white, or donut peaches, which are all at the market now?
Yeah, they're all great. I unfortunately, I think peaches are getting too sweet. I don't know if they're being bred that way, but I miss a little
too
bit of
sweet?
The, yeah, I miss a little bit of the acidity. Sometimes if they're too sweet, they really become a little bit one-dimensional. But one thing that's happened, too, kind of the new salad of the moment, is peaches and tomato. And that's a lovely combination, especially with some feta or goat cheese and a little bit of fresh thyme. This is really a beautiful flavor combination.
You also combine them with peach schnapps and basil?
Oh, this is my go-to dessert. It is so good. You can just slice them. And in this case, it's okay if they're really sweet. You dilute a little bit of peach schnapps with some water. You can, or you can use a little white wine. And then you let it macerate for about 10, 15 minutes. And then sliver fresh basil on top. And this is also just a fantastic combination. If you add a little pinch of salt, it really comes together.
Do you ever make peach ice cream?
I have never made peach ice cream. Do you?
Yeah. But... It can be a problem. Sometimes I've made a big mistake. I think I should have made it without the egg custard, which is, you know, the basis for so many ice creams.
Mm-hmm.
But it makes it a little grittier. If you just do the simple one, simple is better often, just with milk, and it works much better.
Most of the bases these days for my ice creams and sorbets are buttermilk, or is buttermilk.
Yes.
And you can get delicious buttermilk today, too.
But you can't get buttermilk that isn't fat-free, I had to go to the Midwest to get real buttermilk at Kroger's. I don't know why you can't get it in New York.
Well, it's possible, Ben. I've never really had real buttermilk. I'm not sure. But I also have trouble with the egg custard base for ice cream. I really do. I don't make great ice cream.
It makes great vanilla. Roseanne Gold's latest book is Radically Simple. We will continue our conversation. Take your calls at 212-433-9692. Or you can write to us online at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. We are back with Roseanne Gold, whose latest book is Radically Simple. It is the 11th cookbook that you've written on
it's
the 12th?
It's actually my 13th.
13? Oh, my. Well, I didn't want to say that. I thought that might sound like bad luck. But Roseanne has written many books that suggest that we should think small or think simply.
Simple.
Radically Simple being the latest of. But this one, you don't limit yourself to three ingredients,
right,
as you have in
this
some of the
past
one.
This is a little bit of a different concept. It's really about the interplay of a number of ingredients and ease and time. So, but some recipes have only one ingredient, so it's really a lot of fun.
We are inviting our listeners to call us at 212-433-9692 or to write to us on our show page at WNYC.org. Or if you tweet us your three-ingredient summer recipe or your limited, your simple, radically simple recipe, as mm-hmm. we are saying today, from the farmer's market or elsewhere. But remember our handle. It's at Leonard Lopate. So we have other people calling in as well. But before we get to them, I mentioned ice cream. You've given us a recipe for ice cream using strawberries, grappa, lemon verbena, and lemon buttermilk.
Yes. Okay. So that's a little bit of an adult sundae, if you will. Mm. Again, there are some beautiful strawberries in the market right now. What I'd like to do is splash a little grappa on that and toss it with a little bit of sugar and let that sit while I make the base for my ice cream, which is a famous recipe now because it's in every one of my cookbooks. And that uses buttermilk, as we talked about, sugar and lemon zest. And you can make it very quickly. You put that together and just dice some lemon verbena on top. And it's a very, very special dessert. Leonard, one thing I wanted to say about farmers markets, though, I tend to go to the one in Union Square or the one in Grand Army Plaza in Brooklyn near where I live. But the other day I was at a farmer's market on 100th Street and Madison Avenue. And wow, they have some really different things there that I had never seen before. So it occurred to me that there is a lot of diversity in farmer's markets around the city. And I saw a bunch of weeds, and it turned out it was fresh amaranth, and I had never used it before. I'd never eaten it before. And this is like the best kind of ingredient because you can use the leaves, you can use the stems, you can use the root. And I made a wonderful pesto out of it. And then I had fun. They also had something called pumpkin scapes, and this I had never heard of.
Pumpkin scapes?
And wow. Big leafy bunches of greens, and the stem tastes like delicious celery, and I sauteed it with garlic and tomatoes, and that was also delicious. It had a very unusual quality. My husband said it tasted or smelled a little like roast beef. So it's fun to get out there and explore all these markets. I also found out that there are more farmers markets now in New York and in the entire country. In fact, the USDA just came out with a press release last week that the number of farmers markets have grown 76% since 2008. And that's fantastic.
Well, there was an article just the other day in the New York Times about how local farmers are struggling, and farmers without farmers markets, they wouldn't be able to give us the diversity that they provide for many people. I'm still surprised. I have a farmers market directly across the street from where I live every Sunday, and yet people are going into the local supermarket and buying vegetables there, and I wonder, why would you do that? Why would you buy strawberries from California when you can get the most delicious strawberries from right around here?
Yes. I mean, I think maybe price has something to do with it, but I don't understand that either. Exactly. But what was also surprising was that, of course, California has more farmers markets than any other state. But number two was New York. And I found that really, exciting.
Let's take a few more calls. Bankatesh from Long Island. Hi, you're on the air. Did I pronounce your name correctly?
It's pronounced as Venkatesh.
Okay, I left out the middle part.
Oh, that's okay. Thanks for taking my call. I'd like to share a recipe. Since you guys were talking about beets and beetroots, this is an Indian recipe. It's called a beet curry. The way you do that is just chop up the beets into little pieces like cheese that you'd get in a supermarket for sampling, and then just saute that in olive oil along with cumin seeds, and then after about like 20 minutes or so, you just throw a chopped up piece of onion and cook it together and put some turmeric and salt and a pinch of salt and cook it together for about another 20 minutes. It makes a really good beet curry, and it's and beets are supposed to be super foods, and this is something that I'd want to share because this is something that's been done in India for a long, long time, and it's something that I do myself.
And that sounds really delicious. What do you saute the beets in? Is that olive oil or ghee, or what do you use?
Olive oil.
You use olive oil. And yeah. Is the pan covered at any time? Are they kind of steaming as they're cooking as well?
Yeah, you could cover the pan. That makes it. But then you'd want to periodically check just to make sure that it's not getting burnt.
And is it completely dry at the end, or is there a little bit of liquid?
Oh, the... there's a little bit of liquid. You can also add some water at the end to make it like soft, but then it's not completely necessary at all.
I love this idea. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Now let's go to Hank from Gowanus. Hi, what's your suggestion?
My suggestion is for a very simple sandwich, take a leaf of cabbage and smear it with crunchy peanut butter and lay in some slices of purple onion and roll it.
And cabbage, peanut butter, and onions?
Yum.
Yeah.
How did you come up with that combination?
I don't know. I had a girlfriend that liked cabbage, and I was playing around with it, and I found cabbage and peanut butter was great, but then putting in the purple onion just really sets it off. It's like this little explosion that happens in your mouth.
Is that relationship still going?
No.
Well, you should make it again. Maybe I will too, because red onions right now in the market are gorgeous. They're especially one kind called red torpedo onions, bright red and this long stem that look like scallions. They're great.
Thanks for calling us. Amos from Maplewood. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, yes. It's actually a two-ingredient recipe.
Oh, my.
It is, I found that chilled watermelon and Bulgarian cheese are an excellent combination. And if you cannot find Bulgarian cheese, I found that feta cheese is a good approximation.
Now, Bulgarian cheese is like feta cheese?
Yes, it's a salty white cheese.
That's wonderful. I watermelon and feta have become very popular in the last number of years, but thank you so much for that. That's the quintessential summer dish.
And you've given us a recipe for watermelon Napoleon with goat cheese and basil.
Yes. And what I do, so it's a little play on Amos's idea, but I also take the watermelon and I liquefy it so it really becomes a little bit of a dressing and add a little bit of salt. And I cut the watermelon to look like slices of tomato, so it's very, very beautiful. Another thing I like to do is with fresh basil is to actually fry my basil leaves so they get this gorgeous color and crispy. So that is a way to make a simple tomato and mozzarella salad very special.
Because usually you blanch them if you're going to cook them at all.
Right.
Some people blanch them when they use them in a pesto.
Mm-hmm. And you don't have to, but you could. But frying them is just like a wonderful new conceit.
Judy from Richmond Hill, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Zucchini is abundant, and I try to cut it in strips smaller than linguine so that it's like spaghetti, and I cook it in olive oil, salt and pepper, and lemon zest, and then at the end, off the heat, when it's al dente, off the heat, add the lemon juice from the lemon, and because I'm a thyme is my favorite spice, I add fresh thyme to it. It's amazingly fresh and lovely and now abundant.
That's a wonderful idea. And it's so interesting you mentioned thyme. I had written myself a little note to mention this, is that fresh thyme this year is also my favorite herb. I'm growing it on my window box, and it is wonderful. I think it may really change certain recipes more profoundly than almost any other herb. So thank you for that.
You have a recipe for pan-seared salmon and creamy zucchini sauce.
Yes, this is a little secret I'm happy to share. So, Leonard, I basically take out the center of the zucchini, especially this time of year, they can get pretty big. And I cut the skin or the outer part into 1-inch pieces, and I boil it to death in just salted boiling water. Then I puree the zucchini with a little bit of the water in a food processor with cold butter, and I whisk it like crazy, really puree it until it's ultra, ultra smooth, salt and pepper. And this becomes the most delicious sauce for grilled chicken, for poached salmon, and it's wonderful.
We grow zucchini, and of course we have the flowers, but never know what to do with it other than to stuff them and fry them, which isn't always
It's a little labor-intensive. It's hard to fry them well.
You know, what they do you get do soft with the zucchini flowers?
Oh, well, it's interesting. I was in Shelter Island 2 weekends ago with a friend, and not only did she have zucchini flowers, but she also had okra flowers, and I had never seen those, and they were wonderful. And we asked ourselves the same question. We didn't feel like battering them and frying them. So the okra flowers we stuffed with whitefish and capers. It was wonderful. And then the zucchini flowers we stuffed with some very spicy, herby, lemony goat cheese.
Here's a call from Elizabeth from Brooklyn. Elizabeth, hi, you're on the air. Can you make it quick?
Yeah, Leonard, I just wanted to tell you where the term buttermilk comes from. It was back in the days before refrigeration, and people just churned their own butter. So you get this fresh milk from the cow, unpasteurized, stick it in the churn, and it would be in there for hours, and probably bits of bacteria would get in from the air. But by the time you had finished churning all the butter, you had this delicious, slightly acidic, slightly fermented liquid.
I thought it came from the buttermilk sky.
So that is why buttermilk actually has, real buttermilk has no butter. Now they culture them all, but that's what it is. It's supposed to be
okay,
skim
milk. Thank you for clarifying that. I thought the buttermilk was really watered down yogurt, but Because you can substitute yogurt for buttermilk if you're making buttermilk pancakes, for example. You've given us a whole bunch of recipes. I didn't mention the sweet corn soup with scallion butter or the green corn, but they're all available on our show page at WNYC.org. And Roseanne, thank you so much for being on our show again.
Thank you.
I always appreciate having you here, and you stimulate me to think about all sorts of things about cooking that, well, that I probably wouldn't have thought about otherwise. Her latest book is called Radically Simple. It is from Rodale.